We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The New Orleans Pelicans are four games away from winning the championship. Are you as excited as I am?
If it were only true.
So is this the pair you expected to be in the finals?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely your two best teams. I mean, watching that finals last year was, I wanted it to go to best of 15. Or
it was awesome.
Best of 21. Yeah, I'm excited. I obviously don't really root for either of these teams. I know, you know, maybe we should root for San Antonio because some people think Duncan might retire. I don't believe he will, but I'm just glad we get to end the season on great basketball and evenly matched basketball. It's not like how the NFL has been in recent years where one conference is superior. I mean, it's two fairly evenly matched teams. I feel like I know who's going to win it, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised by either.
Yeah. Yeah, so I told you at the beginning of the playoffs that I was going to pick a team other than San Antonio and watch that team through, and you suggested the Thunder, and I'll admit, I tried to watch the Thunder. I really tried to watch the Thunder, and I ended up watching the Spurs again.
I mean, what would you say, you watching, it's hard to criticize a team that gets that far and takes maybe the eventual champion to six games, but what would you say is the one major thing they need to fix?
Well,
not that we want them to, but
there's a whole mess of things actually that the Thunder probably need to fix, and most of it has to do with just how they run their offense and try to. I mean, their idea of getting Durant open to receive the ball is run a pick and roll, and if the other team is good defenders, he doesn't get open, and they don't run a whole lot of other plays. And, I mean, we saw, like, our team run probably, like, seven different plays to get Anthony Davis the ball in various places on the floor. And a lot of them in the mid-post where Durant is deadly. And it seems like when they do get creative and run plays to get Durant the ball in the mid-post area, he seems to back up and kind of dribble backwards to the perimeter and then attack off the dribble. None of it seems like... It doesn't seem like smart, and that's kind of actually why I watch it. Like, a lot of people murder Russell Westbrook. I personally feel that Russell Westbrook is a phenomenal basketball player. But I also say this: he is the guard version of Sean Kemp of the Seattle Supersonics back in the, you know, 1996 area. He was like a phenomenal athlete, a guy who's just unstoppable physically compared to the players he's up, matched up against, but he's kind of dumb. And you can see that just as much as you can see all the raw power and physical athleticism. So it's just hard for me to really get behind the Thunder because, I mean, there's nothing that makes me happier than guys moving the ball, passing freely, hitting wide open threes, and that's Spurs basketball, and it's not Thunder basketball.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad the Thunder didn't make it because I don't think they would have had a shot against Miami. But
it's Miami basketball, too. Miami's a brilliantly intelligent team when it comes to moving the ball.
Yeah, I really can't wait. I just hope everybody's healthy for it. I hope Parker comes back healthy. I hope Wade stays healthy throughout the series. I hope we just get, you know, a series where both of these teams are healthy and going at each other. Because I think that was phenomenal basketball last year, and I hope it lives up to what we saw. So, yeah, I mean, playoffs are coming to an end. We got a couple more weeks left. One more series since our last podcast.
But wait, I want to ambush you with something. I didn't tell you this before we started this podcast.
So rude.
But I wanted to ambush you this because last year you mentioned this a few times. I haven't heard you say it yet this year. So I'm interested to hear your take. You're watching these Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, and you said before that when you watch the finals, you think about our players and which guys you can see actually being able to play in that intensity in that situation. So if I told you, you know, there is going to be three guys taken from the Pelicans to throw into the finals that are on this team right now, do you think there are three guys who have shown they can play at that level or intensity that are on the Pelicans right now?
Yeah, I think there's four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Name them. Who you got?
Well, I mean, I think Davis. I think, you know, he's obviously not afraid of that level of competition after being part of Team USA for the past couple summers. I think he would be fine with those guys. And the other ones are just because of their personality. Like, you never, I think they obviously have the skill set. I think that the issue once you get to that level is kind of a self-confidence thing, in your game. And it's kind of, you know, having that idea that you can do it because, you know, all the guy, I mean, it's really no different. It's just basketball. It's just at a, you know, a more focused level, and I really think any of the core four, or I have somebody always pestering me to call them the four horsemen, I think I would be more than fine putting any of those four guys in that series.
I still have questions about one of them, and it's just because I don't see the night-in, night-out focus from him, and that's Tyreek. I think unquestionably, physically, he could match up there. I just don't know if you would get like the necessary focus and drive all the time, every game from Tyreek, if you want to be pushing at the very end of the finals.
Yeah, and maybe not. I mean, maybe that's true today. I guess I'm trying to think of it as if we project the Pelicans going forward and we know that they're going to get to the playoffs and lose in the first or second round and then have two more years of trying to climb the mountain, whatever. I guess I'm just projecting, will that Tyreek, by the time he has a couple years of playoff experience under his belt, will he be afraid of the finals lights? And I don't think so, but maybe I agree that today, if you thrust him in, you know, it might be a little bit too much for him.
Okay. I actually had four as well. I didn't have Tyreek. I had Morrow. Could you not see Morrow sitting there doing exactly what, like, Shane Battier used to do, or, like, just offensively, hitting the big shot and being perfectly willing to take
it. I agree, and that's one of my biggest fears this offseason is I think if the Thunder are smart, they go after Anthony Morrow. You know, Jeremy Lamb's not ready. They've already killed all of Thabo Sefolosha's confidence. Why not go after Morrow and have him and Lamb kind of timeshare the shooting guard position? And now good luck to those teams who, you know, are leaving the Thunder shooting guard to go help out on on Westbrook and, yeah, and Durant. I almost want the Pelicans to re-sign Morrow as much for our own team as I want to keep him away from the Thunder. That's the one team I'm afraid would get their hands on him, and then a pretty dangerous team. But
all right, so I've ambushed you. So now I'll let you continue to our regular agenda that we had.
Well, I was just gonna say the last thing that happened, the one major thing that happened since our last podcast was obviously the draft lottery. It's what we focused on most of our attention on the last podcast. Just take me through your experience with it. You know, did you have any voodoo dolls set up? Did you have any hope the 5 minutes before it went down, when you saw the envelope, what happened? What do you think of the overall, who got what picks? What was your overall process with that half hour or so?
So I hated the lottery for the way it made me feel, but I did try. So when I watched the lottery, when we won Anthony Davis, I did have my oldest son sitting with me when I watched it. So I made sure he sat next to me just to make sure. He wasn't paying attention though. So I do partially blame this on him. He was playing Clash of Clans. So I'm very upset with him about that. But then Adam Silver, if he was the one who planned this, he makes me very upset because always before they pull out the team that won from the envelope and then they say, and now that pick will be transferred to so-and-so.
Right.
And they don't have, like, they don't know that, oh, if it's the 10th pick, it goes to Philadelphia, so let's pull Philadelphia out of the envelope. So he holds up that envelope, and he pulls it out, and it's something other than the Pelicans logo. And I was so friggin' excited. I jumped out of my chair. And then I realized it was the 76ers, and those bastards had taken my pick. And so I had, like, this moment of extreme high. I was like, yes! We got one of those guys. This is so awesome. And then I had the crushing defeat. And so, yeah, that whole experience sucked. And then to see Cleveland win again, screw you. I'm sorry. I don't care about if Cleveland's had a horrible sports life just overall. Screw you guys. You shouldn't win that many.
But, I mean, wouldn't you say the one saving grace? I would have said that if the Pelicans weren't going to win it, my ideal scenario would be twofold. One, you get as many Eastern Conference teams in the top five as possible. And they got, you know, obviously the top four picks and five of the top six. And then two, I wanted to see Detroit get jumped and pushed out of their pick to make them a little more desperate this summer for the, you know, off chance that we could work some kind of trade centered around Gordon going out and Monroe coming in. So I mean, other than the Pelicans keeping their pick, I like the way it played out. I mean, anybody in the West who tried to tank this year, you know, you had this feeling that the Lakers would get lucky, get the number one pick, and then, you know, start their rebuilding process and be a threat again. Or Sacramento, I mean, you put Embiid next to DeMarcus Cousins, and that's a pretty interesting front line for the next couple of years. I mean, I would say, other than the Pelicans getting in the top three, it played out pretty much how I wanted it to.
Yeah, and I just love looking though at like the projected draft, and I keep getting to number 10, and like Draft Express. I know you would be upset with this, but like the 76ers are getting Aaron Gordon. But like other names that I keep seeing there are McDermott or Stauskas. Like, are these guys even like more than role players?
Yeah, Gary Harris, same thing, an undersized shooting guard. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I've given up on that a long time ago.
You don't care. You like your Drew, and it doesn't matter what they get.
Yeah, I mean, if they buck, don't make it any better for us. But I mean, I understand it. I just, you know, I'm not going to go rooting against people or rooting for, you know, Nerlens Noel to have a Sam Bowie type career. Just whatever they do, and I still really happy with the trade. So,
okay,
yeah,
so. Were you fooled the same way when they pulled the 76ers out of that?
No, only because they did the same thing with the Magic a couple picks earlier.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of, you know, once I saw that, I was like, oh, okay. So I expected the Philly. Plus, I knew that they needed to pick Cleveland out, and it wasn't anywhere near the Cleveland logo. So luckily, I didn't get fooled and have that excitement. But I will say the couple minutes going before, you know, my rational mind knew it was a 4% chance. But for some reason, you know, I felt like it was 50-50. Like, I really kind of started to expect it, you know. Ration kind of goes out the window in those couple minutes when you're a fan. But yeah, I mean, no pick. The obligation is fulfilled. I'm saying if you're looking at any bright side, you know, the Pelicans now could trade any future first rounder. Yes, even the 2015 first rounder, you know, the second, because none of these trades go through anyway before the moratorium. So right. The people, I think, often get confused by the rule. They think that you can't trade two consecutive first-rounders. The rule is you can't owe two consecutive first-round picks. Correct. So as soon as it passes and once all these trades – so on draft night, you know, trades usually go down. Remember the holiday trade went down on draft night, didn't go through to July 10th. So really, you know, they could trade any future pick now that their obligations are fulfilled. So it's a little silver lining, but yeah, it would have been nice.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on away from, my crushing despair and
everybody blaming it on your son.
It's true. His name is Garrett. I'm not going to tell you his email address because you'll send him hate mail. You'll be very confused.
Tell us his, Clash of Clan or whatever it is online profile.
So everybody can crush him?
Yeah, so we can take down his little fort. God, I hate that game so much. I'm telling you, like, trying to be a teacher, 90% of your students will be on that game nonstop in class. Nothing you can do about it. So got my own little hatred for that game now. This just adds to it. But, yeah, let's move on to some of the more exciting things that, I mean, this offseason, we're about 5 weeks away from, I mean, really, 5 weeks from today, we should know what our roster is going to look like for the most part.
Yep. And then we'll have all summer to chew on it and see what we feel about it. So I'll let you ask this question because I think this is like, you're more interested, from what I understand, in skill sets than names right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously, I know we don't talk about this enough, but obviously we're hoping that Eric Gordon gets traded this summer. But if you look at the guys who are under contract, let's go into this assuming that the finishing five, those five guys, are all under contract. Austin Rivers, Jeff Withey, we pick up that option, and Alexei Ajinka. So those are the eight players that are under contract as you go into the offseason. Now, instead of talking about what guys we would want, I think the place to start would be just skill sets. So, you know what your core basically is. What skill sets would you want to complement that core as you're looking around for guys that are available? And, you know, rank them in order, because the Pelicans don't have a ton of cap room if Gordon is still here. They don't have a ton of, you know, options and exceptions. You're going to probably have to come to a situation where, you know, you're choosing one guy over the other. Neither is ideal, but you value one skill set over the other. So I just wanted us to rank the skill sets that we want to see the Pelicans go out and get this offseason. So I'll start with you. What was at the top of your list as far as just a specific skill set that you want Dell to target?
All right, so number one, and again, this is based on the finishing five, Rivers, Withey, and Ajinka are the team. Number one for me is a three-point shooter. Of course, I'd prefer for it to be Morrow, but if it's another one, I'm fine with that. It's just got to be a guy who is a legitimate threat, a guy who the other team knows that he is going to knock that shot down more often than not. So you have to pay attention to him. And I need that because if Gordon's having one of his off nights or they're playing off of Tyreek way too much and he's not being able to be effective going to the hole, maybe he's having his periodic turnover problems. I want to be able to put a guy in who could stretch the floor and make it easier for Drew or easier for Davis to operate. My second guy is a rebounder. And I'm not saying he's got to be – I mean, people always say, well, I want a big man who can block shots and rebound. But honestly, most of the guys who are capable of doing that at a high level are very highly paid. And I don't honestly care how awesome of a defender he is. I want a bruising rebounder. A guy who, if we're out there and we're just happening playing one of the few teams that has a couple guys that are just crushing us, and like it doesn't have to be like I'm not sitting here thinking of like Memphis with Randolph and Gasol because usually we match up fine with them on the boards, but there are some teams that just kill us on the boards. Toronto killed us one game on the boards. It's just there are some teams that do it, and I would like to have the opportunity to finally put out there just a guy who's going to eat every rebound that comes off the glass and hopefully doesn't foul enough that it becomes a problem in the 18 minutes he'll be playing. And then my final spot is just a pure defensive point guard who is not turnover prone.
Wait, a point guard?
Mm-hmm.
So just a backup 12-minute game point guard.
So if Rivers, we can say Rivers is doing decently defensively, and he's got a spot up shot. But I don't want Rivers always running off the bench. The offense. I mean, and I know I can shift Tyreek there. I know I can shift. I have Drew, but I'd like to have one guy who's capable to come in and just bring the ball up the court, be a water bug, quick guy. He passes the ball off to someone else. Maybe he can hit a three-pointer, probably nice if he's not terrible at it, but mostly I want him to be able to just, if there's like a guy who's tearing us up perimeter, I don't want Drew to have to spend all of his energy killing that guy. I want this guy to be out there to throw at him.
So like your dream offseason would be Anthony Morrow, Reggie Evans, and Patrick Beverley.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
If we're assuming Gordon is still around.
All right. Well, I mean, I had two of your number one was my number four, and your number two is my number six. My number one priority. Yeah, I went eight deep.
Wow! Look at you.
Well,
you're so prepared compared to me.
My number one was this might be cheating because it might be two things, but I'm gonna kind of as one, just a long, defensively intelligent wing player. So I say long, not tall, because I really don't care how tall the guy is. I care much more about his wingspan. I would always take a 6'6 guy with a 7-foot wingspan over a 6'8 guy with a 6'8 wingspan. So just a really long, defensively intelligent, a guy who, I mean, Monty said it took a couple of months for Morrow to pick up the defensive system, and once he did it, he was probably average at that point. He wasn't utterly terrible. I think that I don't think it's a very complicated system that Monty runs. I think that, once you get to a certain point in the NBA, the rotations you make off of defensive switches or traps or whatever should be pretty instinctual. So just a long, defensively intelligent wing player. I mean, you were more, your top priority was offense, but I still think that there is going to be enough offense on this team that my number one was that. My number two was specifically a rim protecting big. And I talk about that because I think that Monty is going to stay with this hard hedge system. And when he does that, when one of the bigs hedges and is 25, 30 feet out, that basically leaves the other big in the middle of the paint, usually having to cover two guys if that ball gets passed into the interior. And, he's got to be long and he's got to be able to deter shots at the rim, which Davis could do when the other big is hedging. But when it's Davis hedging, you know, we just didn't have guys who could do that this year. Third was a big who could move well in pick and roll defense, basically the anti Robin Lopez. So as you can see, my top priorities are all defensively oriented.
Okay.
Four was the same as you, a wing who consistently drain the spot up three. Then five, to me, this is a luxury, a wing who could put the ball on the ground and create for himself and or others. So I would prefer the guy who could hit the spot up over the creator, but gosh, it would be nice to have both. Six was a big who could rebound. Seven was a big who could defend the low post. And eight was a wing who could rebound. So, you know, those are all things that I think as you get further down the list, it's a luxury. And, you know, if you could find wings that you could do multiple things on this list, if you could find bigs that could do multiple things on this list, that's great. But for me, the top priorities were all defense. I really think, you know, we'll be fine offensively, even if we don't add guys who give us more than 5 to 8 points a game this offseason.
I'm trying to think of, like, who that – I guess we won't talk about that quite yet, about who that is, like, that player who you most want. So let's let me ask you one question about that, though. So when you're talking about, like, the bigs who are able to rim protect or be able to, you know, protect in space, do you think that those guys are readily available or easy to come by at all?
Easy? No. I don't think in free agency, no. I think that there are two that in a dream, maybe three, that in dream scenarios for Eric Gordon with JaVale McGee, Tyson Chandler, and gosh, why am I blanking? Oh, obviously Roy Hibbert. I think that there's a couple of guys, all three of those guys rumored to be somewhat on the trade market. I think that it's small chance, but possible. But no, if those guys get to free agency, they do not fit in this MLE price range.
Right. Okay. All right, I was actually, when I was doing it, I was trying to think like more along the lines of what I think we could be expected to get to. So
yeah, there might be one, and this will lead me to our next question. And there might be one in the MLE tournament. So, you know, just looking at it, for those who haven't gone on the website, you know, if you've been with us for a while, you remember the 6-pick tournament and the 10-pick tournament from years past, where we basically put guys up against each other at this time and, you know, had our battles between our writers and then had you vote for which guy you would prefer. This year we're doing an MLE tournament where, for those who don't know, the MLE is the mid-level exception. It's an exception that you could give out that usually is between $5 and $6 million a year when you, you know, total it out over the duration of the contract. And we just found a bunch of guys who are projected to be in that price range or the lower end of that price range. And we're going to kind of go to battle over the next couple of weeks, 16-man tournament. Again, go to the site for the brackets and matchups, but each of us are going to represent a couple of guys. So, you know, I guess first tell the audience that the people you're representing and let's leave them out of it. Other than the guys that you're representing, who would intrigue you in this tournament?
All right. So first you want me to tell them who I'm representing?
Yeah. Just...
All right. So first I have Cephalosha, Tabo, and then the guy I'm actually most excited, I'm hoping I can turn it into something pretty fun. Swaggy P, Nick Young, who played for the Lakers last year. Those are my two guys. But if I was most, like the ones that I'm most interested on the list that I would like to see become Pelicans or just the idea of them is interesting to me, I'm a fan of PJ Tucker, which shouldn't really shock anybody. And this may surprise a few people. I like the idea of Okafor.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's my one. I represent PJ Tucker. I had an early pick, so you'll see how it goes pretty downhill. I represent PJ Tucker, Kevin Serafin, and then CJ Miles, which if you are under the age of 18, I will recommend you do not Google CJ Miles. Because there is another CJ Miles who does something very different, has a very different career that is not appropriate. So, but anyway, so those are the three I represent. But yeah, the top of my list of the ones that intrigue me, like you, Okafor, and one of your guys, Cephalosha. What's intriguing to me about Cephalosha is, are we led to believe that the age of 28, 29, a player just lost his shooting touch? I mean, that's not what goes if something goes in your late 20s. I don't believe it. To me, it's got to be something psychological or because of the role or, because of the guys he was with. I don't know, but I'm so intrigued by Cephalosha because I think if he's a free agent last year, you know, he gets maybe double what he's going to get this offseason. And it's can we buy low and maybe build back up his confidence or find out what was wrong in OKC and, you know, make this a better spot for him? I just love the idea of being able to grab a guy who's a winner, a defender. I mean, the Thabo Cephalosha from last year checks off a lot of the boxes that I had, you know, as far as my key priorities. So I'm really intrigued by him and by Okafor, another guy who, if he stays healthy, is probably out of the price range, but obviously could come in tomorrow, knows Monty's system, you know, could just step in and possibly be a defensive impact player. So, I mean, that's why I'm interested in Okafor. What was it that intrigued you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't even want a guy who's going to come in with the expectation that he's going to be starting for like 30 minutes. But I think Okafor, because he's coming in and he's coming off of an injury, you could very easily have the conversation with him like, look, we want to bring you in. We want you to be able to play for 20 minutes unless we have like a real need for you in certain situations. And just, I think you could have that conversation with Okafor at this point. And I think he's a different sort of guy and a different sort of mindset. He makes me think of like a true veteran, been there, willing to do whatever he needs to for your team kind of player, less than some other ones like we've had in the past. Like Chris Kaman, he wasn't like that. He wanted to play the minutes, and he's going to whine and talk if he's not there, if he's not getting them. I think you'd probably get the same sort of thing if you brought in someone like, say, another MLE guy, Spencer Hawes. I don't see Spencer Hawes as the kind of guy who would take very nicely to you putting him on the bench and not giving him 25 to 35 minutes a game.
Right.
And when you have Ryan Anderson and you have Anthony Davis, well, that's probably how long they're going to be playing.
Right. Maybe if Gordon's moved, the wing player we add this offseason will finish games, but most likely no big man that we add will finish games for this team.
Right.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Here's my other question for you: is are you familiar with the process of it's pronounced either two ways, either Voie Dyer or Voie Dyer?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's just in the legal system where a lawyer could just absolutely strike a potential jury member.
Okay.
Doesn't even have to give a reason. Let's do that for this tournament. I'm going to allow you to strike just one or two people that now Dell Demps does not even have the option anymore. You've taken it off the table for him, that you would just don't want to see on the Pelicans whatsoever. And then, you know, using the contracts that we put in the bracket maybe, but just one or two guys that you just absolutely strike and don't even want any part of.
Wow, can I have three?
Sure.
Because there are three guys that I have a feeling I could see. Well, actually, I can't see Dell bringing them in. I could see Monty playing them if he did. And that's my worry. So, like, any of the guys of Caron Butler or Granger or Marvin Williams, I could just see them being brought in and being the veteran guy on the wing who is smart and veteran, and he's a veteran. And by the way, he's veteran, so he'll do veteran things, and he'll play veteran minutes. So we'll play him minutes.
Is there a reason you left Richard Jefferson off that list? Would you be fine with him, or did you just...
Oh, well, yeah, Jefferson. See, we have so many of these guys. Yeah,
sure. Actually,
I'd rather have Marvin Williams than Jefferson. So we'll take Marvin Williams and put him back in the list and put Jefferson on. Yeah, like those, the early 30 swingman who has lost every bit of athleticism they used to have, please no.
I mean, we see these guys contribute for good. We see, you know, Ray Allen doesn't have athleticism. Shane Battier has lost his a long time ago. I mean,
yeah, but Shane Battier has switched to power forward, and Ray Allen can still actually run, or at least in this offseason, all he has to do is run faster than David West.
Mike Miller has no athleticism, but he had some huge shots for Memphis. I mean, we see guys like that actually contribute, and, you know.
All right, well, then let's flip it around. Who you could put your names on there.
Oh, for me, there's number one, like, and people can mark it now, and if I come...
You can't say Swaggy
no,
Pete.
No, if people come back, if I come back on the podcast and try to turn it into positive if we sign this guy, I'm lying. But number one at the top of my list is Marvin Williams. I would be furious if he was our off-season addition. I just, to me... I think it's kind of this plague that some Pelicans fans have, or you know, this feeling of, well, anything's better than Al-Farouq Aminu. Well, you know, that's fine, but that's not an argument in and of itself. You know, you don't just go from something terrible to something bad and find yourself happy with it. I just, Marvin Williams is literally average to below average in every category, no upside. I don't feel like he could really cover threes either. He's the top guy on my list that you know, I'm afraid of adding this offseason. At least those other guys, they would come cheaper or probably on shorter contracts. I just Marvin Williams is number one, and then number two is Jordan Hamilton. I think he's a guy that, you know, there was some interest in earlier in the season because he was hitting his shots and he was rebounding okay in the limited minutes. But, you know, Houston tried to give him a try and he couldn't even work out over there. And, you know, honestly, I don't want any more 23, 24-year-old guys. I want somebody who's at least a slightly older veteran that could, like I said, step right in and understand the defensive scheme from, you know, the second day of training camp. So those would be the two that I would just absolutely veto from this list. And, you know, I look at the list and nobody gets me super excited, but really nobody else other than probably Marvin Williams really, you know, would get me that upset either.
Right. Yeah, Hamilton has like a reputation of being like a knockdown, awesome three-point shooter. The dude's career three-point average is 35.8%, which is below league average. I'm not guard average or small forward, league average.
Yeah, and it's so spotty, and it's, yeah, yeah. I don't feel as strong about him as Marvin Williams, but just no interest. Yeah. But, I mean, here's my other question. So right now, you know, if the Pelicans basically clear all of their cap holds, you know, basically renounce the bird rights to Jason Smith, Aminu, Brian Roberts, etc. They're looking to be a little bit over $6 million in cap room if they wanted to use it. But there's one other guy on this team that if they, you know, that they could probably dump, and that's Austin Rivers. You could imagine them being able to find takers for Rivers if they went to a team and said, hey, you know, we'll give you Rivers, give us a couple of second rounders, or give us, you know, this prospect that you have overseas or whatever, and just dump that salary, which is about $2.5 million. And then at that point you could start to get to where you have enough cap room to throw out 4-year $40 million type contracts to guys. You know, do you see anybody that you would be willing to do that for and go to a new level of free agent? Like, let's say, I mean, I imagine that that would put you in the game for a Luol Deng, a Marcin Gortat, a Pau Gasol. Like, would there be a caliber of player that you would be willing to basically dump all those bird rights and even Austin Rivers to try to make, you know, a bigger splash than I guess we're expecting?
So I went down the list of all of the unrestricted free agents, trying to come up, like figure out which ones I feel would have a real impact on this team, that I thought we could get as well. I only ended up with actually one name, left that I thought for that price you could get him for a decent deal, who I think would have a real impact on this team. And honestly, I don't think he would want to come to New Orleans, but if other than him, I couldn't get excited about anybody else. I just don't feel like they're going to be impact players. So do you want to take a guess at my one guy?
One guy that wouldn't want to come to New Orleans, you want three-point shooting or a crazy rebounder. Gosh, this one's got me through a loop. I'm going to guess... Well, it's definitely going to be Rudy Gay. No.
No, not Rudy Gay.
I guess my guess would be, you said unrestricted?
He is unrestricted.
Lance Stephenson.
And it flies in the exact face of what I just said about the MLE tournament. Paul Pierce.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's the only guy. I mean, I went down this list, and there are some nice names on there. And you mentioned, like, Luol Deng and Pau Gasol, but Paul Pierce is the only one who I feel could have an actual impact on how this team goes. Somebody who's just got, like, monster balls and knows what to do when the game is, like, on the line. He'll go make a play. He could be a great veteran presence for this team. I don't expect him to be taking, like, I don't think he's going to be getting like a $12 million contract a year unless Brooklyn offers it to him because Brooklyn doesn't care about money. But the rest of the guys, I just don't feel like they're going to have that kind of impact and bring that kind of swagger to the team. So Paul Pierce was the only one I liked. How about, otherwise I don't want to give up young prospects for mid-tier free agents who typically don't move the needle much.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have like any, like, Zach Lowe, of course, he writes for Grantland. He's a very phenomenal writer. He keeps bringing up now in the playoffs that there's a lot of teams that were like, well, you could pay like $6 to $8 million a year for a player, or you could pay minimum salaries for one who is 20% less. And during the regular season, that doesn't matter, but in the playoffs, it really matters. Do you buy into that?
I mean, it's so weird because any philosophy I buy into, San Antonio just spits right in its face. I mean, I don't think they have a top five player in the NBA. I think that they, you know, they could do it with, you know, smoke and mirrors and team basketball or whatever. So anything I say will look stupid compared to the way San Antonio's doing it. But if you can't do things the same way as San Antonio, yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, I think you shorten your bench big time in the playoffs. There's more TV timeouts. There's more days between game. I mean, you don't have four games and five nights type of thing. So yeah, in the playoffs, I think 90 to 95% of who wins and loses is going to come down to those top handful of players. So you know, depth's not as needed. You know, and if 85-90% of your payroll is in your top six guys, I think you could get by fine in the playoffs. So I do tend to agree with that. But then again, San Antonio comes by and makes you look stupid for believing in something like that. So outside of them, I do tend to believe it.
Yeah. Although I will say it's not just San Antonio. I mean, like Dallas this year, they played surprisingly well for a team that had nobody who's fantastic anymore. I mean, Dirk had a nice shooting year, but the guy got like, what, six rebounds a game? Yeah. I mean, they're not. He's not a complete player any longer.
I still think that's. I think when you look at the teams that overachieve, the easy correlation is injury luck. Like, okay. I mean, really, I really think we could have been where close to where Dallas and Portland ended up if we had that kind of injury luck and vice versa. So I don't know how much to buy into somebody like Dallas.
Okay. So other than Paul Pierce, though, I did have one guy who I actually thought a little bit. Let me get your feeling, because I think he's definitely in that range. Marcin Gortat, the Polish hammer. So do you think that would be a difference maker if they grabbed Gortat? They gave up Rivers and grabbed him.
I don't know, because, I mean, Washington had him on the bench, you know, at crunch time of numerous playoff games this year. You know, how could a guy be a new and we've talked about before, if Anderson and Davis are on this team, are you going to be able, is your big men going to be able to finish games? And, you know, how many needle movers are there in the NBA that don't finish games? Right. You know, people always talk about starters. You and I have never cared. But you know, if I'm going to make a move, if I'm going to give up Austin Rivers, and not only Rivers, but basically lose all of my depth, because, you know, I'm throwing away the bird rights, and if I were to do that, all I would have left is the room exception and then veteran minimum exceptions to fill out my roster. If I'm going to do that, the guy better be somebody who finishes games for me. Gortat, you know, in that situation wouldn't really interest me.
So anybody interest you?
I mean, the closest I could come is Luol Deng, but I'm terrified of the miles he put on in Chicago. I wouldn't be able to bring myself to do it. I mean, age-wise, he's really not that old, but miles-wise, you know, it really scares me. So,
and quite honestly, you know, it's a dysfunctional team, so it's hard to put any of this on him. But did he have any real impact for that Cleveland team when he went there?
No, but like you said, yeah, there was a lot of dysfunction, and it seemed like he had kind of checked out early, and they were already shopping him just a couple weeks after they acquired him. So, I tend to agree. I think defensively, he could be somebody that could step right in and have some kind of impact for this team. But not something that I really think a big key to this offseason is what we do with the guys who have bird rights. Can we, you know, sign and trade Aminu and be able to keep some kind of cap exception trade exception, or even sign and trade him for a player? Can we, you know, can we go over and keep Jason Smith, who, as I'm doing this Glory Days series, I mean, he's really a guy that the injuries have been terrible for him, but when he plays that 15 to 20 minute role, I think people forget, you know, just how much he could bring in that small role. So I just think you would be losing a lot of depth and a lot of value for, I don't really see many needle movers in this class. I see a bunch in 2015, but not really any here.
So let's say the only thing that I thought about that I wanted to hit you with here was, let's say we talk to New York and they realize that Carmelo is going to go away and he is willing to come play next to Anthony Davis, and you have to put down Eric Gordon and one of our other good players to get them to do a sign and trade. So Eric Gordon plus Tyreek, or Eric Gordon plus Anderson, or Eric Gordon plus Drew. Would you do that?
For Carmelo?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a huge Carmelo fan, but even like if you just step back and think about it realistically, Carmelo is probably a top 15 player in the NBA. And if you put a top 15 player next to Anthony Davis and any of one other player, whether it's Drew, Tyreek, or Ryan Anderson, isn't that a team to be pretty scared of?
I mean, I think this is going to be a team to be scared of regardless. And, yeah, I mean, I would do Gordon and Tyreek. I think if you want to make a four-man combination with Carmelo, it would be best to put him with, you know, the best shooters that you have, the best catch-and-shoot guys that you have, and the best defensive players that you could possibly put together. So,
But also the part of this I didn't mention was I should have thrown this in there. But, of course, you're also going to probably be paying Carmelo Anthony $20 million a year.
Oh, more than that, but yeah.
For 20, 25 for 4 years because in the sign and trade, it's 5 years. So,
yeah. No, I mean,
is it worth it?
See, this is always the hard part to me when it comes to the offseason is we talk about moves in a vacuum, but the reality is it's, I mean, not to cop out, but I have to know what other options I have. You know, there's a lot of moves I'd probably do in a vacuum, but if I had all those moves at my disposal, I would rank them. And part of me thinks there would probably be a better path than Carmelo. But if you're talking about absolutely nothing else is on the table and the Knicks come to me and say Gordon and Tyreek for Carmelo, yeah, I would do it. But I mean, that's always the hard part about talking off season is all the other things that are possible that we can't be privy to. So,
well, let's put it this way: just thinking about your imaginary awesome off season, and that was one of your options. Would it be in your top five?
See, I don't think so. I really think Anthony Davis is 25 to 28 point per game type player. Like I've always believed the David Robinson projection, and I don't want some ball dominant guy added to the team. I think, you know, I think we pretty much have enough right now, and a lot of our growth is going to come internally. So no, it wouldn't be at the top of my list of dreams, I guess I would have.
Okay. I was just wondering, because, you know, every once in a while I cut myself thinking about, like, because about Carmelo and thinking, you know, I have, like, a really negative, just general impression of Carmelo. And I've had that negative impression of him for a long time. But am I just being stupid? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, the one interesting thing for me is all the guys from that draft class, LeBron, Bosh, Wade, Carmelo, Carmelo Anthony actually has the highest career earnings, so good on you, Leon Rose, for getting your man paid.
Yeah.
But so we've talked about this MLE tournament, and everybody in it other than PJ Tucker is an unrestricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back at Dell's track record, and I say, I love the idea of this MLE tournament. I can't wait to have the debates, and I've been loving doing the research on all the guys that are out there. But in the back of my head, I keep asking myself, are we just wasting our time? Because Dell Demps has never, ever signed a major or somewhat costly unrestricted free agent, ever. He's made six pretty much key moves during the offseason. Technically, all six of them were trades, but three were trades in the conventional sense, and then the other three were we essentially went after a restricted free agent and wound up working a sign-and-trade with the other team. But that's it. The offseason, it looks like he has targeted either trades or restricted free agents in order to, you know, get his big pieces every offseason. I just wonder if it's, you know, if this is a pattern for him or this just happened to be where the value was. Why do you think that, you know, we've seen this trend from Dell, and do you think it continues?
So I think we can absolutely see an end to it this offseason. I think the number one thing that Dell has been doing is just following his young veteran strategy. And the guys who are young veterans who could possibly move the needle are all going to be restricted free agents, or you have to trade for them. I mean, if there's any potential left in a guy at all, or he's still young and talented and developing, there's going to be interest in keeping him with a team that has him. unless it's Orlando and Ryan Anderson, which blew my mind at how easy that was. But there are guys in this tournament that we're talking about who are young and who are still going to be unrestricted free agents. Now, they're not as young as maybe I think his preferred age is somewhere between 22 and 24. But some of these guys would still, they're at age 25 right now when, you know, Davis is reaching his peak. They're going to be 27, 28, or starting to reach his peak. So they'll still be young enough. So I think it could end this offseason. But I think generally the reason why we've seen what we've seen is because he is 100% buying into his own plan.
Yeah, I think there's another thing here. I agree that that's part of it, that yes, it is very hard to find a good 23, 24-year-old unrestricted free agent. But if you notice another trend here, it's his major acquisitions. Let's say his last four major acquisitions were Lopez, Ryan Anderson, Drew Holiday, Tyreke Evans. The thing that all four of those have in common is they were all basically recently under new ownership and or a new GM. Like every single one of them. It's somebody new was coming in who wasn't attached to the players. And I think sometimes people forget how big the human element is. I mean, as a GM, you try not to get attached, but you see these players every day. You do like sometimes we tend to do as fans and go, oh, well, yeah, Aminu hasn't done this yet, but he's really working on it. And he hit that corner jumper the other day. If he could only develop that, you know, so you don't want to get rid of Aminu because you don't want to feel like you've lost something that you've been trying to develop. And you get this kind of attachment that sometimes makes you overvalue your players, where when a new guy comes in and he doesn't, you know, have that kind of attachment or wants to build something a different way or go about something a different way, I think it's easier for that new guy to part with somebody who's on that team. So, I think there's part of that there. And then also maybe Dell just, I think a GM's like anything else. You come in as a rookie. Like I imagine a GM who first starts negotiating trades, I doubt that they have the same tricks in their tool bag as a guy who's been doing it for 20 years. So maybe part of it's Dell also saying, okay, here's the new guy on the block. You know, it's possible I could take advantage of him where I know I'm not taking advantage of Tom Presti over there or Sam Presti over there. Sorry. Or somebody who's more of a veteran. So, I think that in addition to the trade and restricted free agency route, we've got to recognize that there's an also commonality there of getting guys from new regimes. And you look around the league, I mean, you've got the Clippers, but that's a little different because, you know, obviously they're a contender, a quasi-contender. But you got the Bucks who, you know, have new ownership now. You have the Knicks who have a new GM in the front office. You have Detroit who has basically a new guy running the show in Stan Van Gundy. I think if we see a trend continue, we would see Dell kind of going after guys from those teams or, maybe targeting those kind of areas. Do you buy into that at all?
Yeah, actually. And all the teams you mentioned except for New York have young players who have maybe not panned out as well as people expected to. And that also seems to be what he likes to target. Guys who, you know, maybe they had some hype, but they're not blowing people's minds with their abilities. So he can maybe swoop in, pay a little extra, and get them.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think it's something that I expect him to be able to be very heavy into trade conversations. It's just a little different scenario than he had last year because it's going to be harder for him to make uneven trades salary-wise because we don't have a bunch of cap room. We don't have a ton of assets, but, you know, like I said, the first round picks back in play as a couple of smaller assets. And man, you know, trying to predict this off season, I feel like, I guess let me ask you this, like how, if we would have been sitting here, when we were sitting here 1 year ago, and somehow a version of me from the future were able to send you the opening day Pelicans roster, how shocked would you have been? You know, try to imagine it's the beginning of June of 2013, and you get handed the Pelicans roster from 3 months later. How shocked would you have been?
I would have been extremely
shocked. Compared to what you were expecting.
Extremely shocked. Like, I had no expectation that Jrue Holiday was going anywhere.
Right.
And I was equally surprised when I saw they were going after Tyreke Evans. I thought it was like, you know, just smoke and mirrors. I thought there was no chance that was actually going to go through.
Yeah.
I couldn't wrap my hand around how that Dell would actually go out and, you know, trade for a premier guard, already have a supposed premier guard, and go get another one. I was like, so I'm well past being able to make any predictions over what Dell is going to be doing as soon as this offseason starts. But, you know, hopefully it'll be exciting because, you know, he seems to target guys who have all the potential in the world, and if you're not able to draft those guys, how else are you going to get them?
Yeah, I think, but I see, I think that part's done. I think the talent and those type of guys, I think they're gone. I think now it's kind of these, you know, fill in type of supplementary pieces. And I'm curious to see what kind of guys he goes after there. Cause it'd be, even if, you know, as we all pray, you can move Eric Gordon, you're still looking at four guys with high usage rates that are probably going to be the guys who take the fourth most, you know, shots on this team, and especially as AD starts to evolve. So it's going to be really curious. I mean, the funny thing is we see a lot of former Hornets in the playoffs, you know, playing fairly well or fairly big roles for their teams, you know, so it looks like Dell could identify and Monty could develop guys who, you know, could play those kind of seventh, eighth, and ninth man roles for playoff teams. Now it's just going to have to be about Dell being able to get the right ones here, or maybe bigger pieces. I mean, I was kind of surprised by your Ryan Anderson season in review this past week, who, if people haven't read it, should look up on the site. It doesn't seem like you are as convinced that he's, you know, necessarily a major piece going forward. So maybe.
So I think he could be, but as constructed, I don't think he can be. So, I mean, that's the whole thing with Anderson. I mean, and again, I also have to, like, he is basically small sample size theater right now. 22 games. I mean, that's all we got from him this season. And he was coming back from an injury, so he wasn't even at full strength for the beginning of those 22 games. And then he went out. So maybe he's a better defender and the team can play better defense. But I mean, as much as I want to sit here and talk about how awesome Ryan Anderson is, and even more than that, like, I love the hell out of watching him play basketball. If I just sat down and said, on this team, if I could only watch one of them play basketball going forward, it would be a really close toss-up between Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson. Just because Ryan Anderson does the particular things that I love the most. He's able to shoot the three ball, and I love the three ball. So, I mean, Dust is amazingly bad at defense. That's what the numbers tell me.
I think the numbers told you that the team defense was bad.
It's true.
With,
but then the numbers tell me the team offense was good. Is it really him? Probably. So yeah, I mean, I gotta try to look at it both ways. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's something that, I guess I just always wonder if you bring in the right small forward, like how much could he change things and kind of pull everything into balance? Because going back and watching these old games, man, I mean, teams act like Aminu isn't even on the floor. It just, you know, completely changes all that. And despite his length and, you know, whatnot, he was not at all a good or great defender. So, yeah, I really just wonder. And again, yeah, like you said, small sample size. We have no idea what this team would have progressed into as the season went on. So it'll be an interesting offseason, but yeah, one that I think if anybody could predict it right now, you know, I just don't see how you can. I think we see some trends in Dell, but like you said, I think this could be the year that he breaks some of those trends because of our specific situation and the guys on the market. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. It's going to be interesting MLE battle. I don't think you and I go toe to toe in the first round, but hopefully
we will. Swaggy P is undefeated in this thing. He's going all the way.
I'm telling you, if you would have talked to me a week ago, I would have said that I don't want that guy anywhere near the team. You can make some really compelling arguments that I'm kind of shocked are there, but could be compelling for Swaggy P. It'll be an interesting little tourney.
Yep. So everybody should pop in on the site and take a look at that as it goes up over the next couple weeks. Actually, a little longer, probably. We'll be coming back probably a little closer to draft night. Talk more about the offseason and what we plan to see on that night. Who knows, maybe we'll see a trade again.